Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 66. What if your father went missing?
My brothers and I have about an 8-year difference. My brothers are fraternal twins. So when I was in high school, they were still second grade or something like that. The dynamics between my parents were getting pretty negative. My mother had schizophrenia. So when they were born, that's kind of when her schizophrenia got unleashed. Yeah, my mother's schizophrenia really developed when I was around 8. She would break dishes in the kitchen sink, and she would hear voices, and she would be overly concerned about my brothers and I, and she would just constantly tell us to watch out for people taking advantage of us. And it could have been the schizophrenia, but it could have also been that she was a child of the Vietnam War. When she was about 20 or 21, she escaped the war. She got into one of those refugee boats and ended up in Hong Kong. And then when she was in Hong Kong, that's when she met my father. About 9 months later, I was born. But by that time, they had migrated to California. My mom was on her own when she escaped. So there was a bit of pressure for her to create some kind of income so she could send it back to them. Same thing with my father. He was the only one at the time before his cousins also escaped. Both my parents were able to reconnect with their family. They would talk on the phone often. On my mom's side, on the family, every time we connected, they would be asking when we could send money over. It was just their main focus was money. Being 21 years old, deciding to leave her whole entire home behind, to live in a completely foreign country and learn a foreign language, because she didn't know any English until she got to America. There was a lot of paranoia, and she would find my money and keep it and not give it back to me. I'm trying to make sure I get straight A's so that I can get into college. While I'm being studious and applying for college and writing all these essays, and then I come home to turmoil at home and seeing how stressed out my father was, he would leave home pretty often. He would leave home to visit his family in Vietnam. He would go to Vietnam for, on average, 3 months at a time. Apparently, they're divorced when I was a freshman in high school, and I didn't really find out until I was a junior or a senior. When I finally found out that they had been divorced, they had decided to actually live in separate places. I had gotten accepted to UCLA, and when I was at the freshman orientation, I had gotten a call from my brothers who told me that my mom was demanding some money from my dad. She was adamant that he give her money, and when he said no, she actually grabbed a knife from the kitchen, and she became really angry, and she stabbed my bedroom door out of anger of not getting money. And so my brothers freaked out. The first instinct was to call the cops. So they called the cops, and then child services came and took my brothers, so that way they could be safe from that situation. And at that point, it was deemed that my mom was unfit to take care of my brothers. Meanwhile, I'm at college orientation, you know, becoming a brand new student at UCLA. I'm about to start my life, my new future, and then, you know, feeling tugged at the same time. By the time that I was 21, that's when things got really, really worse. My mom was happy that I was going to college, and at the same time, she would always instill in me that there better be a way that I send her money. So there's this pressure that while I'm in college, I'm not even done with college yet, and she's thinking that as soon as I get out, I'm gonna make some money and buy her a house and do all these things for her so that she could feel secure. My dad, he's always been a gentle, really kind-hearted person. He's the kind of person that would give money to homeless people and just be extremely generous. So that kind of nature combined with my mom being angry and demanding money all the time, he just became really, really stressed out, and I could see it start to wear away at him. I could see that he was internalizing the stress. Coming home from a winter break, first year of college, where he was now staying with my brothers, and that's when he had his first heart attack. And he started to develop brain strokes, and he started to get increasingly sick. He had started to make pretty irrational decisions. He decided that he would take my brothers with him to visit his family in Vietnam. He basically had them out of school for a month, to the point where the school had released my brothers from the roster because they were gone for so long. But during that time when they were in Vietnam, he had multiple brain strokes, and it was to the point where he couldn't speak at all. He had lockjaw, he was mumbling, and he had to be taken to the hospital to do something about his mobility because he couldn't move his arm at all. My relatives helped my dad and my brothers fly back to America, and I saw the state that he was in. I got that he couldn't take care of himself. I want to get my college degree. I want to be able to get myself somewhere, and at the same time, I want to make sure my brothers are okay, but I don't know what to do. When I was in college, I just wanted to live life, and so I partied a lot. I just wanted to be able to have fun with friends and enjoy my youth, and I acted as if none of that was existing. I had decided to just do my life in college as a way to numb out the stress, to just not reach out to my mom and let her do whatever she was doing until my last year of college. I started to pick up a part-time job in the city of Los Angeles. At that point, I was becoming more of an adult, and so that's when I couldn't really ignore things. Somehow, my mom was able to get custody of my brothers. I knew that they would be okay until it wasn't okay. When they called me from the trailer, that's when I decided, yeah, that it's not okay. She moved them to some room in a trailer park in Orange County, and I received a phone call from my brothers, and they told me they're in a room, they're in a tiny room in a trailer park, and there's a ton of stuff that's in the room, so they didn't really have any space to sleep, and they didn't know what to do. I just asked for their address, I got off the phone, I drove straight to where that trailer park was, and I took them under my wing. There was no question at that point. I just said, that's it. The outside of the trailer park looked normal, but going inside, it was probably 100 square feet, but 80% of it was filled with my mom's belongings. Boxes and suitcases, luggages, just unnecessary things. I just said, there's no way my brothers could stay here. I had a big apartment, I had a roommate, really big living room, so they had plenty of space. Then I said, okay, I have to figure this out. They were about to turn 13, but yeah, they had just started junior high. My dad was sick, so my mom offered to help him out. She would help him get his medication, help him go to the doctor. So it was a very interesting relationship between them because they're divorced, but she was still helping him out, but they would always be arguing and she would always be wanting money. You know, he's trying to find peace. And as he started to recover a bit, he was able to speak a little bit better. He was able to communicate his thoughts. His hands could move at this point, but he was still making pretty irrational decisions. Big mess. When I took my brothers under my wing, fortunately the city actually had representatives for the sole purpose of helping people become legal guardians, or I don't think it really cost that much either. I was so concerned I'd have to pay all these legal fees, but it was provided by the city, which was great. It was great. So I was able to get food stamps. I was able to just get monthly stipend to help take care of them until they turned 18. They were just so respectful and humble, and they didn't really go through that rebellious phase that I did when I was their age. It really did feel like I was suddenly a parent and I suddenly had to figure it out. Learn through mistakes, and I just felt so grateful that they had, you know, normal teenage life, actually. It was like they're my own kids at the same time as being my younger brothers. But yeah, the one thing, though, is that they really didn't want to refer to me as a parent. They really wanted to keep referring to me as a sister, and that was part of them wanting to growing up into as men. After my brothers finished junior high, we would actually visit them from time to time. Even though it was very painful, it's really difficult to be around that situation. There was a period of time where we didn't visit. I was asking my mom about my dad. She was saying that he had gone somewhere, but he wasn't back. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. Where did he go? And she said she didn't know, but he'll probably be back. And this was after a month of wondering where he was. And then 1 month turned into 2 months. And 2 months turned into three. By this time, I'm starting to get concerned. What happened? Where is he? Because we haven't heard from him. So she's trying to assure me. She says, no, it's not a problem. Nothing's wrong. But I knew that there was no way he could have been out of the country because he really didn't have the funds at that time. And I'm just thinking in the back of my mind, like, okay, I don't know what could have happened. So I get a phone call, and it was my dad's best friend. And his best friend says, do you know that your dad is on the news? And I said, no. And he says, the news is saying that he's at a hospital as John Doe, and that the hospital's trying to look for his family. And I'm just dumbfounded. I just felt really numb. And I'm just thinking, okay, I'll just sit there and be confused. And I go onto the internet and I search the name of this hospital. I search the name John Doe, and sure enough, it was the first article. I click on it and there's an image of my dad. He looks pretty disheveled. He's not looking straight at the camera, and the whole article describes his mannerisms at the hospital, where he's aloof, he kind of smiles to himself, that he was left at a Buddhist temple. There was no identification found on him, and he doesn't speak a word. So I'm just looking at this and thinking this is not real. This, at the same time, I get, well, that's a picture of my dad, and that would explain why we didn't know where he was for several months. Why is he in this condition? How did he even get to a point where he's left and abandoned at a Buddhist temple? Who did this to him? Who took his identity? Why would they take that away so that people don't know who he is? I'm like 21, 22. So at that time, with all that I knew, I decided not to tell her. I didn't want her to know because I wanted to make sure that I was the only one, my brothers and I would be the only ones to know where he's at, because I wanted to make sure he was safe. And so she didn't know. She just thought he was just gone. And she, in her schizophrenic state of mind, didn't really press it. She just thought that as part of her paranoia, she thought that the government had something to do with it. She just thought, oh, the government probably took him or something. I didn't want her to show up to the hospital demanding money from him. That was my quote-unquote rational thinking, because it's just, I just didn't really trust anyone. And so then I called the hospital. I told them, I said, I'm John Doe's daughter. I would like to see him. The drive on the way there, I'm thinking, okay, so what's going to happen when I see him? I'm just glad he's alive. And again, through my head, who did this to him? Why? There has to be something to be said for why he's in this hospital right now. I show up and they said he wasn't really speaking, not really recognizing anyone. He just sits there. So they pointed to this room with a bunch of chairs and a television set. And there he was, he's just sitting, just looking off into the distance. His eyes were a little bit glazed over. He's wearing this burgundy red sweater. I start to walk up to him. He still doesn't recognize me. And I sit in front of him and I said, Dad. And Dad, it's me. And he starts crying. He starts crying out loud. And he starts stammering a lot of gibberish because he can't speak. And I don't understand what he's saying, but I know that he recognizes me, and he's crying and crying. And it's almost like a cry of relief. And then in the middle of his cries, he starts smiling and laughing. And I start crying, and just a huge burden off our shoulders. And he notices that I have, you know, I'm wearing this jacket that has like fake fur around the hoodie, and he starts pointing at it, and he says in Vietnamese, he says, beautiful, beautiful. And he starts trying to stammer out my name the best way that he can. And, you know, we're sitting there and just through our tears, and then I think, okay, so what now? Because he's in this state of mind right now. So what's next? In my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I can't really take him to live with me, not when he's like this. I have no capacity to be able to take care of him. What do I do? I don't have the money. I don't have the funds for a live-in nurse. And they said, so we're gonna discharge him to a nursing home. He's only 49, 50 at this point. So I'm putting my dad in a nursing home with all these elderly people, which makes no sense. But it's the only choice I have. His social worker finds a quote-unquote permanent nursing home. He just needs to be transported. And I decided that I would drive him over myself. So I picked my dad up. I wanted to show him where my brothers and I were living so that he could see and feel that we've been okay. And I thought it was a good idea. So I bring my dad over, and he sees my brothers, and he's so happy. And he says, he stammers out the word home. You know, we're feeling really good, all of us, and we decide to play an old videotape that my dad recorded when we were little. And he was recording a tape of my brothers and I playing around and just being little kids. And he's laughing, and my dad sees this, and he's so happy, and he's smiling. And I say, okay, well, we're going to have to go now. And he starts to express a bit of anger. He doesn't want to leave. Eventually, we get him in the car, and we drive him over to this new nursing home. as we're walking up the steps and down this corridor of white walls, my dad starts to look pretty irritated, sitting in his new room, and he's silent. I say, okay, I'll see you later, Dad. We visited him once a week, and every time we would go visit him, he would say, let's go home. And I would always have to say, I'll come back next week. He would try to follow us, and then we would have to walk really, really fast, and he would just be standing there in the distance. A year passes, and I've been told that he is in the ER. He had another brain stroke, and he's in a coma. And then this different kind of nurse shows up. He's basically telling me that my dad's not going to get any better. He's had so many brain strokes. He's going to pass away. Why didn't I come up with a way to have him live with me? All these things that I should have, could have done so that he wouldn't have got to this point. Dying at the age of 53. So my dad ends up passing away, and we decided that we would take his ashes to Vietnam, bury him with our grandparents, and basically the family plot. I pretty much told my mom about my dad when he passed away. Strangely, she was upset that I didn't tell her, and at the same time, she was a bit nonchalant about him passing. She lectured me about not telling her, and she was saying that she would have been able to protect him from the government, and that if she was able to step in, then the government wouldn't have been able to allow this to happen. My mom's schizophrenia is completely talking as she's saying that the government still has something to do with why he ended up passing away. Yeah, so at his funeral, she was rather indifferent. I think she did cry a little bit. I don't know if she was also just being numb to the whole thing and just realizing what was actually happening. For a long time, I did blame her for his death. There was absolutely no way I could have a normal, functional conversation with her about anything that happened revolving around my dad passing away. She was always going to have this paranoia, blaming the government. She would always deflect anything. There's no way in her mind that she thought that she caused him any stress. She couldn't really, I think she couldn't really bear to think that she could cause that kind of harm to some other person. I had to really do a lot of meditation and a lot of self-healing work to get that she's always going to be the way she is, and that there really is no blame, and that most especially I had to take the blame off of myself and take the guilt and really put that aside. You know, there's nothing that I could have done to save him. They went through a lot to uproot their lives, leave their home, and try to start new here. That puts everything to perspective. Everyone's just trying to do the best they can with what they know. My mom is still alive. I have no idea where her actual residence is when she's here in the United States. She doesn't allow us as her children to know that, because she's trying to protect us from whoever the landlords are, because she loves us unconditionally, and she would do what it takes to make sure we're not going to be affected by these people. So if that means we don't know where she lives, then we don't know where she lives. We'll just meet in some public place, hang out, and then she'll just take the bus to where she lives. Sometimes I'll get angry and just demand the address from her, and then she'll just laugh. Aw, daughter. You love mommy. It's okay. You don't have to know my address. Okay. All right. It just became much more of a peaceful decision to not actively reach out unless she reaches out, and just maintain harmony as much as possible. She's always going to be mom, and that's my mom. Yeah, my brothers are now 26, and And my brothers went to college, finished college, and one's married. And, you know, the three, my brother, his wife, and then the other brother, they live together and just very, very peaceful house. They have jobs, savings, retirement fund. I mean, it's almost like magic. I never did find out where my dad was. All I could find out was that he was abandoned at a Buddhist temple with his ID cards taken away from him, and he had apparently experienced some kind of brain strokes again to the point where he couldn't speak at all. So whoever was with him thought it was best to just leave him in a safe space. I don't have anger about it anymore. I don't have questions of why or who did this or what can I do. It is a memory, and it's a huge lesson, and I treat it more now as a very, very intense, powerful lesson on how I can really live life a different way. In the midst of seeing my dad's health decline so much as he stayed in that nursing home, I began to reflect more on my own health, and I had started to exercise more. I started to watch my eating habits and decided, okay, well, I want to be better at my yoga practice. I like how it makes me feel. I like that I feel really calm afterwards. And it had been years since my dad had passed, and I just thought, you know, I want to honor my father's life, and by that, I want to make sure my life is really peaceful and just practice yoga and extend my life this way. And in the process of learning about this teacher training, I feel this sense of completion. It's this feeling of fulfillment, as if, wow, I just found something that was missing and I didn't know was ever missing at all. And I fell in love with teaching yoga, and I started teaching it to other people for free, started teaching on the beach, community classes. I started teaching it inside this nutrition club because I was working with the health coaching business. And at the end of the hour, I could just see the bliss in their faces. I liked helping people for at least that hour to de-stress, to do something with their stress and let it out in a really healthy way by stretching their bodies and getting connected with their breath to help them just relax for 1 hour. And it's been really fulfilling.